morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of August 16th, 2015. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. As always, we have a great panel of editors here to talk about, well, the big stories, the important stories, and sometimes just the incredibly interesting stories that have happened this week in the world of IT. Joining us this week, we have Sarah Peters, Senior Editor at Dark Reading. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
And Dave Wagner, Executive Editor for Community here at Information Week. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks, Kurt.
Well, as we come into this week, there are a lot of interesting things that have either just happened or are about to happen, but I have to say that probably nothing has gotten as much attention in the world around computers as the release of information from AshleyMadison.com. And we have both security and privacy aspects. So both Sarah and Dave have something to sink their teeth into here. But Sarah, I want to start with you. This is one of those things where the hackers had promised that if AshleyMadison.com didn't shut down, that they would release all of this information. Ashley Madison did not shut down, and here's the data dump. So is this a carry a bunch of profound security lessons for the rest of the industry, or is this just one rather interesting business being taken advantage of in a rather prosaic kind of way?
That's a really good question, and I don't honestly know if I have an answer. I think we don't know a lot right now about how the attack happened, but it seems to have been probably like a SQL injection kind of thing, probably a kind of basic problem with their with basically their code in their web application database. So it's, you know, another kind of software security issue, just not being written securely enough. When it compared to a lot of different sites, as far as privacy goes and identity management and stuff like that, Ashley Madison was actually better than a lot of other similar sites, which is one of the reasons that it attracted people that were, it was attractive to the people who wanted to use it for extramarital affairs, which is what its bread and butter was. But it also attracted people who were not necessarily using it for that case. That's one thing that we have kind of been learning as information has come out, is that something was revealed that there's a guy in a country where homosexuality is illegal and punishable by death who opened up an account on Ashley Madison because the security was supposed to be better, because his identity was supposed to be better protected. Now he's saying he knows that his information is about to be revealed, and he's looking for a country that might provide political asylum for him so that he can get out of the country before he's found and killed for being a homosexual in his country. And there's lots of people who have been contacting some of the reporters who've been covering this since the breach first happened 4 weeks ago, before the information was revealed, saying, do you think that this is actually going to happen? What can I do? Really panicked people, kind of worried about their lives falling apart, who might have been using this site 4 years ago and aren't using it now, but now they're in a new relationship and they're afraid, you know, like, well, I was on this before, but I'm not on it now, and now it's a different marriage, and what am I going to do? How am I going to explain it to my wife now? that I'm not using it with her, but I was using it with my ex-wife and all this kind of stuff. It's very complicated. What I will say is that Ashley Madison's pretty much done nothing. Like, I would hope that the lesson is don't behave as blasé as they have. They kind of took the "we don't negotiate with terrorists" kind of approach, where they basically said, we're going to keep doing our business. We're not going to take it down, which I can understand, because the option is close down your business entirely or find out if it's going to shut down on its own because you lose all your customers. And you're kind of in a no-win situation there. The one thing they did do for their customers was offer them the possibility of canceling their accounts for free. Because what it used to be was that if you wanted to cancel your Ashley Madison account, you had to pay for that privilege. It wasn't a whole lot, but it was only like $20. I mean, it wasn't a completely insignificant fee. So they were waiving that fee for the people who wanted to get out. But other than that, they're pretty much just kind of behaving business as usual here. And I think that probably isn't making them look so good in the public eye, as though they didn't already have some public eye kind of problems, considering what their business is. But from a security standpoint, though, because we know so little about how the attack occurred, I think the big thing is that the two big things are, you really have to be a lot more careful with your web applications, just how they are written. Really make sure that all of the they're going through the whole software development life cycle very carefully, and also that you're not collecting information that you don't actually need. And I think just in general, that's a rule that we've been talking about for years, and we're not really to the point yet where many people are putting that into practice.
Well, you know, it seems to me that this is one of those cases where, instead of offering the credit watch that so many companies have offered, that they really need to offer some sort of, you know, sofa for people to sleep on. But, you know, there's an interesting aspect of this. And Dave, I wanted to get your take on this. It seems that there is an unusual number of email addresses in the Ashley Madison client list that has some sort of .gov or .mil as the domain. Does that surprise you?
No. One thing I thought about with this Ashley Madison thing is that it makes Hillary Clinton's use of her own personal email server seem a little more reasonable. here's the thing. First of all, one of the things I worry about this is treating this like sport or entertainment, because as Sarah said, these are real people with real lives, and many of whom were not necessarily the bad person that people think. So one of the things I want to be careful about with all my comments here is to just say I don't particularly like this brand of hacktivism, because I think it endangers real people. With the .gov, .mil particularly, it doesn't really surprise me that much. Life is kind of hard working for the government or working in the military. You do a lot of traveling. You're away from your spouse a lot. I'm not trying to defend anybody or their decisions, because everybody's got to make their own decision on this. But we know let's all be grown-ups here for a minute and just say we know that while absence makes the heart grow fonder, it also makes people do really dumb things. So, you know, I don't want to push on that too much. I just... There was a funny line in the New York Times today, which is that somebody said, I don't want to be paying tax dollars for people who were too dumb to get an email address to use just for doing this. And there really is something there really is something to be said for that, that people aren't smart enough or trained well enough or whatever word you want to use to create a Gmail or a Hotmail or a Yahoo Mail or name your free email address here to use for their private activities. Beyond that, I really don't want to judge what these people are into. It's none of my business.
The other thing
is...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say, there's two things that... Number one, if you were going to... If I was going to start an account, honestly, who would I be more worried about seeing my Ashley Madison account? The one, like the people that I work with or the person that I live with? I think I would be more concerned about the person that I live with where I have my personal, my usual like home account open. That's not really where I would want to put it. Like, honestly, I can see the rationale for using your work account for it. I can totally see why that might actually be preferable, but I think that opening a new account entirely would probably be the right way to go about it entirely. But
right. The
other thing to note is that a lot of the emails are also just bogus emails. A lot of the names are bogus names. I think that they're I don't remember the exact number, but there are many, many Barack Obamas in the list of names. So there's you don't really know who is legit and who isn't with these things. There's one thing that they know is that there's a lot of people claiming to be women who are not women on that site. So there's some people saying, oh, you know, Ashley Madison's business would be taking a hit anyway, just because of the fact that maybe their clientele is not exactly who they think it is or who they say it is.
I just find it amazing. This is a fascinating story on so many levels, because there is the technology aspect. There's the whole data privacy aspect. And then once you start getting into the sociology and social commentary, well, that's really fodder for some other publication. But it doesn't mean that most of us can't avoid casting our gaze upon it, much like we do when, you know, trucks wreck on the side of the interstate. You just have trouble not watching. It is an amazing thing. And I'm actually quite one of the aspects that I find fascinating is that Ashley Madison is a Canadian company. And so the fact that a company from Canada has avoided apologizing profusely makes this the most un-Canadian company I can imagine.
What I love about it is it brings the whole concept of the Canadian girlfriend back to the forefront as well.
Oh, it does. Well, now I've got to ask, with this sort of, you know, sucking the air out of the room, in discussions, was there any other news this week that from either of your perspectives? Sarah, how about, you know, on the security front, was Ashley Madison's data release the only thing happening in the world of security this week?
It wasn't the only thing happening, but it sort of felt like the only thing happening. I can tell you that there are just more Android bugs like all the time now. There are a lot of bugs. There are Android bugs. There was a new IE bug that came out, and there was also a Mac OS X bug that could grant root privileges. And that one I found interesting. Well, there's three things really quickly that I find interesting about all three of them. The interesting thing about Android is that we've seen a bajillion, that's a real word, bajillion Android bugs this month, and really pretty significant ones that we yet have yet to really see be exploited. So there's this major bevy of critical vulnerabilities that aren't really being used for much of anything. Then we have Microsoft had a is now seeing vulnerabilities that affect its newest operating system, but it's adopting releasing updates without telling you what the updates do, which is really weird. Like, it'll say, here's a vulnerability, but there's no details about it. Or here's a patch and here's an update that we're giving you, but we're not going to tell you anything about it unless it's really serious. Otherwise, just trust us, you want it. And then the third thing with the Mac bug was that the guy who released it told Apple about it and then released the code for it just a few hours later. So that's kind of breaking the rules of what we call responsible disclosure. You're supposed to give them the amount of time that they need to actually patch the bug before you release the proof of concept code. However, this kind of thing happens often, but it doesn't happen that often to Apple. And this vulnerability researcher just got like the crap kicked out of him by a lot of people who I think Apple fans just can't take it. Like, they just are really touchy and cannot handle it sometimes when they think that somebody is not treating them with the kid gloves that they feel like they deserve. And it was really interesting to watch this guy get so much fury hurled in his direction, considering that if this had happened in against another operating system, I think people would be like, ugh, come on, guy, really? And then they would just move on. It wouldn't receive as much attention as it did.
Well, I've got to ask, was he getting most of the grief because he didn't allow Apple enough time to respond, or is it just for having the temerity to find a problem in Mac OS X?
No, it was the lack of, it was the fact that he found something that was significant without giving it enough, without giving them the proper amount of time to fix it. There was definitely a irresponsible disclosure issue. That was the issue. It was just the degree of rage that I saw from some people I thought was out of proportion to what I would have seen any other community.
And very well, never in character.
What?
I say, never underestimate the rage potential in a bunch of latte-loving, Birkenstock-wearing, Prius-driving Mac users. And I say that as someone who once got out of his Prius at Starbucks wearing Birkenstocks and went, oh my heavens, I've become a cliche. It was a sobering moment, without question. Now, on the Android, before we leave security entirely, one of the enterprise raps against Android is that when you use the word Android, you're really talking about 700 different releases and, in essence, different operating systems. The vulnerabilities that have been found, in general, do these seem to hit a lot of the Android distributions, or is this one of those things where, you know, one particular distribution at a time is having vulnerabilities? I'm curious about, you know, how broadly distributed some of these vulnerabilities are.
Some of the recent ones are affecting most of the Androids out there because they're in some really core pieces of the operating system. The big one were the bugs in Stage Fright, which is the multimedia engine in Android, which affected about 95% of Android devices out on the market today. And other ones that have come since then have also been really pretty widespread. There was one that was very kind of scary, but only affected a small number of HTC devices, I think. But it was a pretty cool vulnerability that would allow you to all of the fingerprint images on it. So it was able to hijack any financial transaction that used biometric authentication and then just harvest any of the fingerprint images on the device. Really cool hack, but only on a few devices. But for the most part, a lot of these new ones affect a lot of the Android devices. And the problem is, like, you know, to your point, with something like Android, there's the operating system, there's this completely open environment where you have lots of application developers developing apps that call to all of these different, these different processes, these different parts of the operating system. And then you've got a whole bunch of different manufacturers and OEMs involved in the process. So the whole ecosystem is huge and sprawling. And when you have something like the Stage Fright vulnerability, you need everybody involved in fixing it. And so Google just issuing a patch doesn't solve the problem on its own. And that's kind of where the problem is. That's the nice thing about Apple is that it, when there is a problem with it, it's able to fix things more quickly when it wants to because it has such an iron fist that it controls the whole ecosystem with. Android is open, which has its benefits, but it's hard to kind of wrap your arms around the entire thing. And some of these vulnerabilities are just so big that they're really hard to fix.
Well, now, Dave, if I'm not mistaken, you're an Android user. Does all of this have you quaking in your virtual boots?
No, because I don't use Stage Fright. I use one called Looking at Your Audience in Their Underwear. I'm one of the 5% unaffected. No, you know what? It does and it doesn't. I've been around the block long enough to know the difference between whether it's Windows versus Apple or Android versus Apple, that you by being in the group that is of larger numbers and more fragmented in structure, that you are opening yourself to more vectors of attack. On the other hand, you're also opening yourself up, in my opinion, to more innovation and better products in the end. Though I'm sure we could all have a big debate over whether iPhone is better than any given Android phone. I tend to think that they are. Obviously every time I hear about a new vulnerability, I want to do what I can to protect myself. At the same time, I've long been accustomed to the reality that I need to make my phone more secure, which I will admit is the reason why I do not bank on my phone. I do not put any sensitive data on my phone that I do not want out. Like some people would hate that as a concept to use their phone. They want to use payments on their phone. They want to use the phone in all of the great ways it can be used. I'm willing to forego some of the convenience for security, and in general, I think we need to train people to make that decision at least a little more clearly in their mind. I, I'm not saying that making the decision to put that information on your phone is dumb. It's just you need to make sure when you do it, you're doing it with awareness and understanding of the best practices in doing it.
Yeah.
And well, I know one of the things, I was going to say, one of the steps that I have taken, I'm an iOS user, but I have not done a jailbreak on a phone in probably four or five years, just because the value that I got from it ultimately to me wasn't worth the security risk. It's one of those trade-offs that I made. And as you say, I think people need to be aware of the trade-offs they're making with all of their technology, but especially as we move to having more financial and other very deeply personal information on our phones, they need to be devices of special concern.
And the thing is, the fact that we have these fingerprint scanners on our phones now actually makes them, and also the fact that with things like Apple Pay have this tokenization now, which actually is really great technology that gets a lot of compliments from people in the secure payment space. It provides a technology that can make banking more secure. It has it could actually help us. So in my opinion, that's kind of, I kind of want to be able to use it for that, as opposed to not using it for that to save myself. I'd rather be able to have my banking experience be even more secure because of my phone, as opposed to avoiding banking on my phone for security purposes.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
There's a if you build it, they will come reality to this, right? I'm unwilling to be the guinea pig while the banks work out the security on my phone, which may be not a fair thing, because my refusal as a hopefully educated user of a technology, not using it, makes it harder for them to grow the technology and the security. But at the same time, I just don't want to be that guy.
I'm with you. I'm not an early adopter at
all.
And
I absolutely agree with you that we can make banking more secure on mobile phones than they are in other ways. What I object to right now is, in my opinion, if I lose my phone, I essentially lose my wallet if I use these things. And if I lose my wallet, And I can't yet live without one or the other. So in my opinion, I'm doubling my risk. But there will be a day where I don't think that that's true.
Well, I would say as well, but I know we've got to move away from this topic, but on that point, one of the things I like about using my phone for some of these is that I back it up. And so if I do lose my phone, because of the security I've got on it, it's highly unlikely that anyone else could use it. I go to the Apple store, give them $75 because I bought AppleCare when I got my phone, and I get a new phone. I restore the backup, and within, an hour, I'm back in business without having to go through the process of canceling all my credit cards. And I think that's an advantage, but that's just me. I appreciate, the Luddite point of view and treasure it in these discussions. I really do. And, speaking of, technology and its limits on Earth, how's that for a pivot to this week's Geekend? Because, if you're having security problems on Earth, I guess the question, Dave, is would you feel more secure using your smartphone as a payment system on Mars?
No, because of all those Martians secretly hiding under the crust of Mars, just waiting for it. but I'll tell you what, this is an exciting thing. David Wagner is going to Mars in 2016. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that I personally in body am going to Mars, but my name, David Wagner, is in fact going to Mars. There is a fun program that NASA is doing called the Frequent Flyer Program that allows you to sign up for free to have your name added to a microchip that is going to be placed on the InSight probe, which launches hopefully in the spring of 2016. And that probe will go all the way to Mars, and your name, along with probably about a million others, although I think there are about 300,000 currently signed up, will be on that chip, and it will help you go to, it will help you be a part of this great mission. And in fact, NASA is doing it for 5 missions in total, and they're hoping it's a way to get people involved in what they're doing. I think it's a lot of fun.
And Dave, aren't you worried, though, based on that movie that just came out about the Space Invaders and Pac-Man and all those other aliens coming from video games over, aren't you afraid that they're going to come and go right after you because your name is on this stuff going to Mars?
That I actually bring that up in the article. I think this makes I really do. It's in the article. I think this brings up a heck of a plot for a movie. I love the idea. The InSight probe is actually going to probe into the crust of Mars in order to do experiments on the way our planet's formed. And I imagine the scenario where the drilling into the Earth wakes up the long-sleeping Martians that have been sleeping below the surface until their planet could be recovered. And when they find the chip on the InSight, they come to Earth using the chip as a shopping list of who to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Martian version of a Balrog going to rise up in flame and darkness and come after David Wagner first.
Right. Well, you know what?
I'd be a little worried about that.
If that's what happens, I think that sounds like a heck of a cool way to go.
Absolutely. way better than most of the ways to go.
Right.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
That's the way that you should go, Dave. We've known each other for a while now, and if there's ever been, I haven't thought a lot about the manner of your death, but now that I'm thinking about it right now, I'm rooting for it to be Martian Balrog.
I don't know exactly how I feel about you thinking about my death at all. But within that, I think I'll take that as a compliment. I think it beats the heck out of many, many ways to die, really. And the best part about that is I get to die with the thought of, yes, I was right. There is alien life.
Yeah. And it knows my name.
Yeah, but on a serious note, I really do think that this is a really smart way of getting people to think about what NASA is doing. I think often what happens with NASA is that we ignore it 364 days out of the year, and we bring it up again when they launch something or when something fails to launch.
Mm.
And I think this is a really smart way of getting people to sort of dream about what NASA is doing a little bit better.
You know, it's funny that you mention NASA in that context, because one of the things that my dear wife Carol and I have watched this summer is a miniseries called The Astronaut Wives Club. It's all about the early manned space program through the eyes of the astronauts' wives. And it really is fascinating to be reminded of that sense of purpose that was huge in the U.S. at that time. And I'm going to assume that it was equally huge in the Soviet Union. But there was a real sense of purpose, and that sense of purpose and that sense of excitement led a lot of young people to look at careers in various, you know, scientific and engineering fields. And it really gave us sort of a grand thing to aim for, to be a focus of a lot of attention. And Dave, you're right. We don't really have that now. There are a lot of smaller efforts, and it would be quite plausible to say that in actuality, much more is being done right now, but it doesn't have nearly the same feeling. And so it would be wonderful, I think, to have something to bring back some of that shared feeling of wonder and accomplishment that was there during the 60s and the early, you know, the first three manned space programs.
Absolutely. That's why I'm a real supporter of a manned, or I should say personed. I think it's important to not use that term anymore. A populated trip to Mars with men and women on board. I think it is crucial that we really start to push the envelope, and NASA is trying a little bit. They're testing the vehicle they think will take people to Mars, but they're nowhere near the green light to funding to actually get to go and to have a schedule for when they're going to go. And I think it's vital, not only for the United States, but for the world, to get together and make this happen as another way of inspiring people to really look towards science as something that makes wonders happen. I think for too long we've been thinking, we've had this problem where we're fighting over whether science is too expensive to be worth it. And I think we have to change that conversation. And that's not even counting the conversation of the people who deny science. It's science's existence entirely, which, you know, we're not even going to go there. But just the people who are saying these kinds of things are too expensive, I think are missing the sort of geometrical growth of human achievement that comes out of something like this.
And I agree. I think that's part of the whole grant writing process when you're looking for money. So much of it tends to be what is the practical application of this going to be. And it seemed over the years that becomes even more important. And I completely understand why that is as important as it is. But, you know, when we diminish science for science's sake to the point that, as you say, wonder completely falls out of the equation entirely, and then everything just becomes about productivity in some way.
Right.
It tends to, I think it attracts fewer young minds, or it attracts a different kind of young minds. And we know that we don't quite have enough young minds going into science and technology. And, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, everybody wanted to be an astronaut. You know, everybody wanted to go into those kinds of fields. And now it's not really on the radar like it used to be.
Right. Well, and, you know, it we've become very risk-averse with science. And
yeah, absolutely.
Because of the money, right? A really interesting thing happened this week, which was that at Johns Hopkins University announced that they had made a major breakthrough in the cause of ALS, in what we sometimes call Lou Gehrig's disease. And they said two things which were very interesting. And the first was, yay, we might be able to cure this. And the other was that they specifically gave credit to the ALS ice bucket challenge that a lot of people were making fun of last year. And they said that they raised, I think it was $200 million through this challenge that everybody said
wow.
They didn't do anything. I may not be exactly right about the number, but it was a lot of money. And what they said, and I thought was fascinating, was that money allowed them to do things that were high risk, high reward. They said up to that point, they were not able to do experiments that they considered unlikely to succeed, but perhaps more enlightening, because the money that was coming in from the government and from other sources required them to be able to show a definite return. And it was one of these high-risk, high-reward experiments that they chose to run because they had a little extra money that turned out to show what they believe may be the cause of ALS, a specific protein. Now, there's a long way to go with experimental evidence to get to a cure, and it may turn out that it's only part of a cause. We've been here before with science, right? But the fact that they had this money that made a major breakthrough in a disease that millions of people are suffering from and die from very quickly, because they were able to take a risk, is exactly why I think we need to be willing to pay for a little more risk in science.
Well, paying for a risk in science seems like exactly the thing we should be doing. And unfortunately, it's going to have to be where we leave our conversation this week. We have run out of time here for Information Week Live. And I tell you what, I don't know about my my fellow panel members and our audience, but for me, the time flew because it was a series of good conversations, and we really appreciate everyone being here for the conversation, not only on the air, but on our website as well. Now, before we go, we need to ask a couple of questions. First, Sarah, we'll turn to you. What do you have coming up in the next week, and how can people keep up with what you're doing on social media?
This week, I have coming up a vacation, so I won't be around too much, but what will be coming out from my end is still some video from the Dark Reading News Desk. We did at Black Hat. We did a lot of a video live that we're now cutting up into the individual interviews, so there's going to be some of that going up on the site throughout the week, and you can also find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters, no H in Sarah.
Well, Sarah, we will look forward to not seeing anything not related to relaxation on that Twitter feed for the next week. hope you come back relaxed, because trust me, the world of IT security just won't be the same without you for the next week. So enjoy, and we'll look forward to having you back on the panel after you return rested and rejuvenated. Well, Dave, how about you? I know I was off last week, and I wanted to thank you for taking the helm of Information Week Live last week. I heard a lot of people saying things like, "Gee, Kurt, why are you coming back? Dave did a great job." And I'll try to forgive you for that. So what do you have coming up for the next week?
Well, I will be sneaking into Sarah Peters' luggage and going on vacation wherever she's going. actually, it's very funny that I just got into this big high horse about risk in science, because the two things I have planned coming up for this week are a look at retro mobile apps and what I think we could be doing, and a look at back-to-school gadgets. So I got a little end-of-summer fun planned for the beginning of next week, and hopefully I can get back to some high-risk science articles later in the week.
Well, when it comes up to these articles, how can people find out that they're going up? I assume that you have some sort of social media presence where you can let all your fans know about these.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at GeekendDave. That's Geekend like weekend, but with a G, as I say to my children. And that's the best place to find me.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. Sarah, thank you so much. And as for me, would love it if people, if you haven't already checked out a recent article that I did on 11 languages that lost their mojo. We've had a great conversation about that. It's amazing what happens when you get the fourth programmers all riled up. And I've got another article coming out, should be up late this weekend, on app developers that don't require any coding at all. I hope that you'll check that out and follow me on Twitter at KG4 GWA. Also, if you're interested in the visual side of what I do, my Instagram feed is Kurt_Franklin. Well, for Sarah Peters and Dave Wagner, thanks so much for being with us. If you're listening to this in an on-demand form, thank you so much. We're glad you are, but do think about being here. You know, Information Week Live happens live every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'd love to have your voice in the online discussion that happens right alongside the on-air conversation. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We look forward to seeing you here next time. Have a great week. Bye now.